The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Too many people settle for average because they feel that it's too difficult to go beyond average to exceptional. The tools are all there, but people don't realize the small amount of extra effort that is needed to reap big rewards. Welcome to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Bruisi. Chris and his guest experts are here to show you where the possibilities lie and what they can do to help you. Now, here is your host, Chris Bruisi.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to you. And if you're in New Jersey, I hope you're drinking hot chocolate and not trying to shovel out. We had, in my area, about 15 inches, and the biggest challenge I had today was to convince my dogs that we should go outside. But we did, and we went quickly. So much for personal information. Well, welcome to another episode of Step Up and Play Big with me. And today I'm going to put some pressure on myself and my guest, Andrew Sherman. I need to go 3 for 3 here in our winning streak with another great show. As I mentioned last week and the week before, and I'll mention periodically today, I encourage you all to call in. If you have a question or want more information about anything that myself or Andrew Sherman will be talking about, the call-in number is 1-866-472-5790. What we're going to do today is, first I want to give you a brief bio of Andrew Sherman. I'm really excited to have him on the show. I bought the book we're going to talk about today, World Rules, strictly on the title. I was killing time one day in a Barnes & Noble by me. Bought the book, and I have no regrets. I've used it in blog posts, and I've mentioned Andrew in it. And I use it, and again, mention Andrew in it when I give a presentation on Road Rules. So Andrew is a partner in the Washington, D.C. firm of Jones Day. He is recognized as an international authority on legal and strategic issues affecting small and growing companies, and is the author of some 26 books on the legal and strategic aspects of business growth and capital formation. He appears regularly as a guest on programs such as CNN's Managing and Daywatch, NPR, Talk of the Nation, and CBS News Radio, among others. He is frequently interviewed on legal topics by the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, Forbes, U.S. News and World Report, as well as by many other renowned publications. He is an adjunct professor in the Masters of Business Administration or their MBA program at the University of Maryland and at Georgetown, and he just recently told me he's moved into as an instructor in their law school. He has been an entrepreneur and involved with businesses and business growth for over 23 years and has won numerous teaching awards at both schools. So suffice it to say, we have an expert with us today. And Road Rules, I think, was one of his first published works to share his life experiences with others. He uses a great deal of wit and enthusiasm, and he provides his perspective on the lessons he has learned along the way. We've been linked by the hip a little bit. We both have the same publisher, Advantage Media. So we're going to spend some time with Andrew going through Road Rules. And Andrew, thanks so much for joining us today.
Wow, Chris, this was great. You know, I could really just sit back and have you go for the full hour, and that would be wonderful. Thank you for that amazing introduction. And well, I got to say, without putting you on the spot, the focus of this show, I mean, I commend you so much for getting this going because, you know, if you listen carefully to the opening words of your announcer about how many people accept average as their personal standard, I mean, think about it. If your show could help move the needle, you know, just even a little bit, I mean, look at the benefits to our society. Look at the benefits to the family of the people who you move the needle for. I mean, I love the focus of the show, and it's an honor to be with you this afternoon.
Well, thanks, Andrew. You know, the history of the Step Up and Play Big, you know, just for everybody's benefit, was this kind of grew on me many, many years ago when I was a college recruiter. And I can't begin to tell you how many times I wanted to leap over the desk and smack the kid I was interviewing, telling them, this is your job to lose, and why are you giving me the same spiel? That's a technical term, I guess. Why are you giving me the same spiel that everyone else before you gave me and everyone else after you is going to give me? It doesn't require an awful lot of extra effort to be above average. But we get comfortable, I guess. I just don't know. But you know, it's a small amount of effort for a great or a larger amount of reward as a result of your efforts. But I appreciate your comments, Andrew.
Now, and as you know, Chris, as of a few years ago, you can't reach across the desk and smack students anymore. They're totally banned that. So you're just going to have to figure out a different way to get inside their heads.
That's why I'm going to keep your phone number in my pocket.
Exactly. Well, I just wanted to react to a couple of the things you said, if that's okay.
Sure, right ahead.
You know, number one, I wanted to confirm your observation. I have written a wide variety of books on business strategy and business planning and raising capital and M&A, which is the day-to-day practice that I've got. But about 5 years ago, and you can relate to this because I think our kids are around the same age, you know, my kids were at that time, you know, late high school years, and, you know, you start hitting your 50s and you start thinking, you know, if I were to get hit by a bus, have I left my philosophies on life behind in writing for my own children to understand what made me tick and what made me get up, you know, allowed me to get up in the morning and be as motivated about what I do and how I do it. So I started writing this book about life, and I took it to some of the more traditional publishers up in New York, and I said, I want to write this book about life. And they said, well, you know, you're kind of a business strategy guy. How about you know, a book about the life of business executives? And I said, no, I want to write this free-flowing book just about life, essentially for my kids and anybody else who wanted to read it. Well, the irony is 5 years later, you know, I think everybody but my kids have read the book.
Uh-huh.
My son brought it out with him freshman year of college, and the book kept getting stolen out of his dorm room, which I viewed as a good sign. But, you know, you try as your kids reach young adults to, you know, leave behind some thoughts about what you believe in, and then you realize that what you've written probably would help a few other people as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I gave my book as a gift to my kids, and they've read it, you know, and I appreciate that. And if they follow 50% of their 40%, you know, I've moved the ball forward down the field, if you will, in terms of, as you said, sharing my philosophies, things that have worked for me, for them to adapt to their own style. And that's, you know, that's the choice people have to make. And those of you out there listening to Andrew today, is he's going to tell us some pretty good stuff. But the choice is whether or not you want to adapt it to your particular style and take advantage of it, because the stuff works. It truly does. I've seen it in my own life. I've seen the things that I talk about that it works. So the choice to you as listeners is to, are you willing to make the change? Are you willing to make the commitment to do something different, to change your behavior, and adapt something that has worked elsewhere into your particular style? We're not trying to create another world of Andrew Sherman's or Chris Ruiz's. My youngest son's first name is Andrew. That was the slip. But what we are trying to do is to give you the opportunity to see the possibilities. Is that a fair statement, Andrew?
It's a very fair statement. And so let me get a little bit personal. You know,
sure.
I grew up very modest means. My dad, may he rest in peace, was out of work a lot. I married a woman coming up on 30 years ago whose parents were both Holocaust survivors, and her father, may he rest in peace, you know, worked for the B&O Railroad, and I still remember the day that he was very excited. He came home to tell me that he had just crossed the $20,000 a year annual salary threshold. I mean, I came, you know, I've pulled myself up from my bootstraps, and, you know, there were no, you know, golden handshake waiting for me. There was no friends of my dad ready to open up doors. And, you know, I know people sometimes get sick of hearing this, but, you know, we have an infrastructure and a society in this country where that is just very possible with a little bit of extra effort. You know, I may never be Warren Buffett, and that's not my aspiration, but I've built up a lifestyle and a reputation and things that I'm proud of, you know, just by willing to just go a little bit harder, you know, work with a little more gumption than maybe the next guy sitting next to me. And, you know, I feel like that's the theme of your show, and it's a very, very important message.
Exactly. I mean, and you wrote in the book that you made the statement that each one of us are the author of our own life story. And I describe that as, you know, far too often many of us allow ourselves to be victim of our circumstances as opposed to becoming a master of our circumstances. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think this victim mindset, it's particularly true right now with the younger people, you know, growing up, and I don't want to get all Gen X or millennial bashing going on the show, but you know, I spend a lot of time between my students and the friends of my two kids who are all in that millennial category. And you know, you and I are guilty. I coach basketball, I coach football, of you know, giving trophies to the kid in seventh place. We were told not to yell at kids when they were not performing well, but to be encouraging. And you know, we're raising a nation that expects to get A's on everything they turn in. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how many student complaints I get if I give something less than an A. And I'm thinking, you know, back in the day, if I got a B+, I went out drinking with my buddies. I was celebrating, you know, not sending 4-page emails to my professors, not that we had email back then. And so, you know, we can't get into this mindset that's dangerous that says, you know, with a little bit of effort, we will get all the things we were hoping for and all the rewards. And as I said, I think that, you know, a good portion of your show's focus is on reminding us that it doesn't come easy, and the world's getting more competitive, not less so. And the more we're in this victim mindset as opposed to author or artist, you know, think of your life as a white canvas and only you get to paint on it. I mean, how cool is that? Cool to be in a country like ours where, you know, almost everyone, I mean, everyone has the ability to advance themselves in some way, and we celebrate it. I mean, we're one of the few societies in the entire world that encourages people to break through where they came from and then reward them from it. Look at our television programming. I mean, half the, you know, Biggest Loser, American Idol, these are all TV shows in prime time that we all watch to reward people for making themselves better or stronger or less overweight. I mean, you know, anyway, I could go on for hours, and I know you probably have other questions.
No, I mean, you touch upon the point of stepping up and playing big. Our life is a function of choices. And I believe, and maybe it's a simplified view, that there's no such thing as a bad decision so long as you're willing to live with the consequences of your actions. So if you're not going to give your best effort in class, you're going to get a C+ or a B, well, that's it. Take a look at what you did and what you could do differently for the next semester or the next time you take that class or a similar class that will allow you to, as you said, be the artist on your own canvas.
Yeah, or, you know, you could step up and play medium, you know, and that would be an advancement. But what you must avoid is either not stepping up at all, you know, or you know, playing to the level that you're really not challenging yourself mentally, physically, financially. You know, I mean, life's too short to just get by. I mean, I feel sorry when people put themselves in that mindset.
No, you're absolutely right. We're coming up on our first break, and we've been spending some really good time here, Andrew and I, talking about, I guess, perspective, orientation, your attitude, all of those key words that people throw around. But very few people want to take the initiative, if you will, and do something about their lot in life, if you will, and to make a difference. So when we come back, I want to talk about with Andrew some challenges and adversity and that we all encounter on the road to life, and how we go about dealing with those challenges and what Andrew calls the speed bumps, and which is a phrase that I used many, many years ago in a high school graduation commencement speech that I gave. We all encounter speed bumps. So let's go to break, and we'll be back in a little bit. Thank you.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Make sure to order your copy today of Step Up and Play Big, where Chris Ruisi coaches you on how to create a future vision, make better decisions, develop effective business habits, and find out what it means to be a leader by identifying and solving problems to drive you and your organization to top performance levels. This book is a must-read for all business leaders. Find out how to get your own copy of the book on Amazon.com or by visiting ChrisRuisi.com and clicking the book. Many leaders and companies work with Chris Ruisi. As a business mentor, Chris helps to guide these leaders and companies to bigger results and puts them on the road to success. If you are looking to step into a bigger role in your organization, email Chris today to learn how you can be exceptional with less effort than you think. You can send an email to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com, or you can visit the website to find out where Chris will be appearing next, coaching, and his books. Visit ChrisRuisi.com to step up and play big.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd like to send us an email, please send it to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com. Now, back to Step Up and Play Big.
Great. Well, hello again, everybody. We're back. And as you just heard, I would encourage you to call in with any questions. We got a great guest here. And if you're a little shy about hearing your name or so on the radio, send me an email to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com, and I'll say your name on the radio. We spent a fair amount of time in the first segment talking about one's purpose, one's position, and the choices we all make in terms of what level of effort do we give. And what I want to do with Andrew now is go back and talk a little bit about, the books talks about, navigating the road of life. And we all encounter in life and in business, our careers, whatever the case may be, challenges and adversity, which sometimes interrupt our direction, our momentum. And Andrew, what I'd like to do is ask you, how do you fight off or deal with adversity and challenges? What advice would you give folks from your own experiences and the work you do with your many clients?
Well, the first thing I would do is change the conversation. Instead of thinking of it as fighting off, I would say bring it on. Everyone successful I know, and I'm sure you and I included, it was the adversities in their life that defined them. It was their adversities in life that were their greatest lessons. It was their adversities in life that made them stronger. And so, part of the message of the Road Rules book is that, it's a little bit like that video game from years ago called Doom. You fight these battles, and every time you win a battle, you pick up another weapon. It's the same way in life. Every time I have a negative encounter, I don't really like it while it's happening, but I get another weapon into my tool belt. And with those weapons, I become that much stronger. And, I think that as drivers on the road of life, if we think we're going to enter the highway and there will never be any traffic, there will never be a car breakdown, there will never be a driver that needs assistance, there will never be construction, there will never be, that's just a fantasy world, especially if you live in Jersey or D.C. where traffic is quite bad, and that's before the governor closes bridges or whatever. So, you've got to be prepared for that as you travel the road of life, and you almost have to welcome these adversities as life lessons. I'm convinced in my 52 years that all of these adversities happened for a reason, and all of them were meant to teach me something, and if I didn't have my eyes and ears open to them, then I missed out. All I did was, be in whiner mode, or victim mode, as you said in the last segment.
Yep, exactly. On my very first guest, on my first show, we talked about what happens when you're confronted with adversity, and his approach, and it works here, and everything is rather than ask why it happened, figure out what you're going to do next.
Correct. What's the learning from it? Yep. You know, when if we can talk for a minute about the subtitle of the book, you know, when I say be the truck, not the squirrel, I'm not saying that you need to, you know, push everybody around and take advantage of the smaller cars on the road. That's not my message at all. The message, because you know you read the book, is that, you know, trucks, if you think about them, play a very defined role in our society. They are the carriers of valuable cargo with a very specific destination in mind. You never see an 18-wheeler out on a casual Sunday drive, you know, compared to the squirrel that's bouncing around, appearing to all of us to have no direction whatsoever, and constantly looking for their next acorn. You know, think about the life of a truck versus a squirrel, and as I point out in the book, many squirrels and other, you know, animals unable to make decisions wind up as roadkill. And on the highway of life, you know, in the ecosystem of that highway, better to be the truck than the squirrel. Better to be strong and durable and moving place to place with a purpose than it is to wind up looking for your next acorn, scampering about and getting run over. And that's really the key message of the book. And then I break out 12 road rules that have meant something to me in my life that I share with the reader.
Now, before we get to the road rules, you know, you talked about learning something from every situation involving adversity. And that's very much aligned with something that I talk about at times called learning it from your game films, which is something squirrels can't do. That if you can take a learning from a bad experience and then ask yourself the next time something like this happens, what would I start doing or stop doing, do more of or do less of? You in essence take what would have been a negative and turn it into a positive because of the new learning. Is that correct, Andrew?
That is correct. And, you know, again, so much of this goes back to some things we've talked about attitude and how you process adversity and, you know, the mindset you take. I mean, we are all drivers on the road of life, and none of us, from the time we got our driver's license, could say that, you know, every trip is going to be filled with glee. But what we can do is say, hey, every trip is an adventure. It's a journey, not a destination, and I'm going to learn as much as I can along the way. And also, as I talk about in the second road rule, I'm going to share the lessons that I've learned with others who want to travel the road that I have already traveled. And that goes back to our, you know, our obligation to be mentors and to be coaches to the people that want to travel the roads that we've already traversed.
Yep. That's what I tell most business executives, that the ultimate for them is to become coaches for their teams. Excellent. Now, you mentioned about the 100 million or so animals who meet their demise on the road. They've all shared some of the same reasons, which were four, that they, first, did not see their demise coming, or second, they were killed by something much bigger or stronger than them. Third, they reacted to the threat with a lack of action or inertia. And fourth, they lacked the ability to escape their circumstances. How does that translate to, you know, the business people you and I deal with, and even in our personal lives.
I summarize those four points and wrap it up into what I call DITH syndrome, D-I-T-H, or deer in the headlights syndrome. And that's exactly what happens when a deer is in the headlights. When we think of that metaphor, we think of someone freezing, and they're freezing out of fear or uncertainty, you know, because they're unwilling to either take the risk of moving right or moving left. And because they can't make a decision, they wind up being hit by the truck. We went through that as a nation and as a planet in the global recession of 2010, 2011. I mean, that huge truck was coming right at us, and we were unable to make key decisions and ended up getting hit by that truck and suffered one of the worst recessions of our lifetime. Now, eventually, people started making decisions, taking some risks. This is what happens when you just stand there. And I think, again, not to keep repeating this point, but this is what ties back to the theme of your show and your book. Don't just stand there. You know, make a decision. It could be right, it could be wrong, but that decision is likely to get you moving in a particular direction, right, left, backwards, forwards, but that movement is the key to getting out of the way of the truck hitting you.
Oh, absolutely.
Standing still, doing nothing, accepting your circumstances or or pretending you're a victim of those circumstances is not going to get you out of the way of the truck. No way, no how.
Now, how does risk-taking, fall into all of this? You know, a lot of folks are not very good risk-takers.
Well, they're either risk-averse and won't take risk at all, or they take too much risk and get hurt by it, or they are unable to use tools to evaluate risk. And so, one of the things I try and do in the book, I'm sure you do in your book, that you'll do in the future on this radio show, is give them some of the tools to assess risk. And one of the myths, in fact, about entrepreneurs is that entrepreneurs love risk. That's not true. I mean, I've been working with entrepreneurs for over 30 years. Entrepreneurs don't love risk. They're just not afraid of risk. And they use their business training and their academic training and their life training and their emotional intelligence to mitigate risk, to manage risk,
mm-hmm.
to not allow risk to stand in the way of key decisions they have to make.
Oh, no. Yeah, if you're looking for a career or a job that is risk, that has no risk, what you're doing is you're deciding to live in a closet.
Yeah, or be a toll booth operator and make change all day. And there's nothing wrong with that. But
yeah,
that's as low risk as it gets until you get replaced by a machine, which is how many tolls are now operated.
Well, yeah, exactly. As I said before, if you can live with the consequences of your actions, then that's not a bad decision. But when you do that, you give up the right to complain about whatever your lot in life is.
Exactly. And remember, we're not talking, sometimes I'll do shows like this and somebody will call in and say, well, I don't need to be Bill Gates. And I said, well, we're not talking about being Bill Gates. I mean, if you take someone, let's say earning $50,000 a year, which is not, unfortunately, a lot of money in this country anymore with taxes and everything else that we've got, and you can move them to a $70,000, $80,000, even $100,000 income potential, you're talking about huge changes in lifestyle. That incremental income is the difference between a vacation or not, a new car or not, sending your kids to a good college or not. Maybe one day buying a condo in a second, place, a beach place or whatever, or the mountains or not. I mean, that incremental income creates and facilitates, all of those things that we define as having some modicum of wealth. We're not talking about being the co-founders of Google here, although
yep.
That would be great to aspire to. We're just talking about making some of the commitments to move your life incrementally, to allow yourselves to do some of the things that you'd like to do, either financially or non-financially. Because the other thing that additional level of effort does is maybe frees up some of your time to coach your son's basketball team or, be more active in your church or synagogue or whatever it may be. I mean, it's not all quantitative reward. It's also liberates you to do some of the things that you want to do to give back to the community.
Oh, absolutely. Again, it's all a function of choices that people make. And as we said at the very beginning, and it's worth repeating as often as we need to do it, is that it doesn't require an awful lot of effort to make significant changes in what you do today and, more importantly, what you may realize in your future. But unfortunately, we can talk about this in the next segment, is far too many people come up with, they become complacent. They're quite willing to,
I'll tell you this, and we can save it for the next segment. Complacency is the cancer that will kill this country. Complacency is the cancer that will kill this country. If we ever suffer, I think that is our number one societal cancer.
Complacency. Yep.
Complacency.
Just sitting by and watching it all happen.
Taking things for granted.
Yep.
Or assuming that they'll be given to us on a silver plate if we just sit around long enough.
Yep. Well, we're getting up on our next break, so for those of you out there listening, and what I want you to do is when you get off this call today is go right to Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com, order Andrew's book, Road Rules, Be the Truck, Not the Squirrel.
I buy the dozen,
buy as many as you can, but save some and go buy my book.
Yeah, exactly.
Step up and play big with
six of each. I mean, six copies, six sesame.
There you go. Six is a good number, six of each. So listen, we're going to break, and we'll be back, and we're going to talk about complacency. Thank you.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Many leaders and companies work with Chris Ruisi. As a business mentor, Chris helps to guide these leaders and companies to bigger results and puts them on the road to success. If you are looking to step into a bigger role in your organization, email Chris today to learn how you can be exceptional with less effort than you think. You can send an email to chris@chrisruisi.com, or you can visit the website to find out where Chris will be appearing next, coaching, and his books. Visit chrisruisi.com to step up and play big. Make sure to order your copy today of Step Up and Play Big, where Chris Ruisi coaches you on how to create a future vision, make better decisions, develop effective business habits, and find out what it means to be a leader by identifying and solving problems to drive you and your organization to top performance levels. This book is a must-read for all business leaders. Find out how to get your own copy of the book on Amazon.com or by visiting chrisruisi.com and clicking the book.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd like to send us an email, please send it to chris@chrisruisi.com. Now, back to Step Up and Play Big.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. And here we are in our third segment. And we spent the first two talking about attitude, how you position yourself. The last segment was really very good, and we talked about what are the things that cause our demise, cause us not to be successful, impact our future plans and direction. And at the very end of the last segment, we started to talk about complacency, and I think that got Andrew sitting up on the edge of his chair. So in his book, he talks about complacency and how dangerous it really is to drivers. One could think about that. But how dangerous is it, Andrew, to us as a society, for business leaders? And what can you do to recognize when it's happening? And what can you do to fight it off?
Well, I think that complacency is probably defined differently for all of us, in the sense of, are we talking complacency in our careers, complacency in our marriages, complacency in our growth as individuals? You know, how many of us can honestly look in the mirror and say, you know, I continue to challenge myself mentally, physically, financially, socially. You know, I continue to challenge, you know, myself to be better, to experience more, to be a great friend, to be a great family member. And I think that sort of complacency and baking, you know, the couch potato syndrome and all the other things are seeping in, and we need to change that. But the two other, you know, sort of evil cousins of complacency are also our level of distraction and our level of disengagement. I read recently that 50% of U.S. workers are either somewhat disengaged or actively disengaged. I mean, how could that be? I mean, 50% of the people we walk around the halls and work with, you know, somewhat disengaged, okay, so maybe you're not loving your job the way you used to. But actively disengage, I mean, that's that guy in Office Space sitting in the corner scheming to blow up the company. So, you know, we've got to turn that trend around as leaders of companies and figure out how disengaged our workforce really is. But the other point I make in the book is the evil of distracted driving. You know, I see it. I'm sure you see it. You know, I'll be driving on the Beltway at 65 miles an hour, and there will be a woman next to me driving 65 miles an hour, putting on mascara, smoking a cigarette, and talking on the phone while driving.
Yep.
And I'm thinking to myself, not only is she endangering herself and everyone around her, but that level of distracted driving on the highway, is probably an equally played out level of distraction in her life. You know, how many people are walking around with an inability to focus on the thing that they're working on? And then that may turn into either complacency or lack of performance or disengagement. You know, I'm all for multitasking, don't get me wrong. But, you know, when I'm on this show with you, I'm on this show with you. I'm not, yep. You know, doing five other things. And that's going to presumably enhance our experience together. But we've lost our ability to focus. We've become distracted drivers on the road of life, both metaphorically and otherwise. 50% of us have become disengaged or actively disengaged. And I think that these are some of the contributors to this level of complacency that's the cancer I think it's become in the previous segment.
You know, you're exactly right. And what happens is as leaders, when we tend to accept the level of performance we get, you get what you're willing to tolerate, so to speak, because you know having an employee giving me 50% is better than not having an employee at all, and that's just such a wrong attitude. And where I think leaders drop the ball is in not explaining to people why they do what they do, so that they can see how their role fits into the bigger picture and how, in essence, when they do perform their job properly and correctly and on a timely basis, it in fact contributes to the greater good of the company, the customers, and to themselves to a large extent in terms of their career and salary growth and opportunities for future positions. What do you think? Is that a fair assessment on my part, Andrew?
It's a very fair assessment. In fact, I think you've hit on a very important point. I mean, you know, what's the definition of insanity, right? I keep doing what I'm doing and expecting different results. You know, if we accept the level of performance that we'll tolerate, then people will start performing to the level they think we'll tolerate, and the complacency and the disengagement and the distraction just perpetuates itself. You know, I heard a cool quote the other day. We are the weighted average of the five people we spend the most time with all day.
Yep.
And you start thinking about that, and you're like, whoa. You know, are the five people I'm hanging with throughout the day, you know, making me stronger or weaker? Am I lowering myself to their level of accepted performance? You know, and if you start thinking about it that way, it really will help you redefine what you're willing to tolerate. And, you know, tolerate itself is a dangerous word because we were taught years ago that tolerance was a good thing. Mm-hmm. Tolerance is not a good thing. I mean, if I sat down with you, Chris, and we were meeting for coffee, and I looked you in the eye, and I said, Chris, I tolerate you. I mean, I really, truly tolerate you.
Yep.
I'm not sure you're going to feel the love and want to give me a big old man hug at the end.
No, I'm going to ask for separate checks.
Yeah, I mean, when did tolerate become a standard that we're willing to accept? And, you know, years ago, I used to do some diversity training, and I remember, you know, being like the second or third speaker, and the first speaker would give this whole beautiful, impassioned speech about tolerance, and then I would just shred them apart. It's like, really? That's what we're striving towards? I tolerate you?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, the one thing that I try to get across to the folks that I work with, other business leaders, or anybody who'll listen, is that the two most important tools, or three most important words, not tools, words that a leader has, are expectations, accountability, and consequences. And if we do a good job of setting reasonable expectations for our employees, our teams, holding them accountable, which to me is a negative, it's how you help them meet those expectations, and then understanding what the consequences are. And there are good and bad consequences to everything that we do. If we could do that as leaders, we would raise the bar not only of the performance of our companies, but we would show our employees, our teams, a path to how they could raise their own level of performance. And that's where we tie in the why. And that all turns around to, Andrew, the, you know, my step up and play big and your 12 rules of navigating the road of life.
Right. I think the one word that we haven't talked about yet, and I know we still have plenty of time, but is this concept of passion. You know, the opposite of disengagement is passion. And,
yep.
And I think in order to embrace the underlying themes of your radio show, we have to enter the highway of life with some passion, with some gumption, with some understanding of what we do and why we're doing it, and what about that thing gets us excited.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of the things you and I share is we get true satisfaction, and it doesn't have to be financial, out of the act of helping people. And I talk about this in the book, you know, when I talk about building a dashboard for yourself, and
yep.
I know this was one of the sections of the book you liked, you know, build a dashboard not just around, you know, how much did I make today and what's in my 401k account. I mean, all that stuff's now available to us on our smartphones. But build a dashboard like, how many people did I get to laugh today? How many people did I make smile? How many people did I make feel good about themselves? How many people did I help with their path? I have a meeting right after this one with one of our younger partners who's a very, very bright lawyer, but needs to build a path for himself, needs to decide in the next 25, 30 years, what is he going to be doing to contribute to this partnership, to this firm? And, you know, I think we're led to believe that it just being smart and good at our job is enough.
No, it isn't.
It is, as a baseline.
Yep.
But there's so much more.
And
I
think if you and others
can help people understand there's so much more, then we've certainly can put a check next to that box for our lives.
Well, yeah, I see my when I was working, you know, in the corporate world, my primary responsibility, you know, other than delivering results, was to get the members of my team to see the possibilities and how they were going to act on them.
And how they were going to add value.
Exactly.
And I think when people begin to embrace that this is not just a job. I mean, this is how they're going to be spending 8, 10, 12, sometimes 14 hours of their day, you know, to the exclusion of other things. If you can't find passion in that, then you need to redefine your path. You need to take a different route on the highway of life.
Well, you know, we want to go to the dashboard for a second. One of the gauges you had was your toe limit warnings. How much weight can I haul? How much can I carry for another without putting my own vehicle
in jeopardy? Well, it's funny. You asked me in preparing for the show to talk about a couple of the books that have influenced me in my life. And, you know, two that come immediately to mind that I think will be of interest to your readers, you know, one was, you know, Atlas Shrugged, I read, and I've read a couple of times, and, you know, just the whole concept of holding the world on our shoulders and what the consequences are of a shrug or a blink, and of course, you know, a lot of the messaging about taking responsibility for your own life that Ayn Rand tried to convey. The second one that really influenced me a lot was the whole Redfield series, the Celestine Prophecy, you know, and the messages there that I took away the strongest, which I talk about as one of the road rules in the book, is paying attention to the road signs on the highway of life. And, you know, whether it's a road sign or a dashboard, are we looking at our dashboard or these road signs and taking away the philosophical messages that's intended? You know, I can look at, you know, a low fuel gauge on my car and know instinctively that I've got to fill up with gas. But what if I look at that low fuel gauge and say, hey, how's my own fuel right now? Do I need to take myself off the racetrack for a quick pit stop? You know, do I need a fill up? Or an oil change, or a lube, you know, or an air filter. You know, all of these basic acts of driving come back to our own lives and how we manage them and the messaging that we take. I mean, one of my favorite road signs, you know, is a one-word road sign. You know, the yellow triangle that just says yield.
Yep.
I mean, reminding us not only to yield to oncoming traffic, but in what ways do we need to yield in our own lives? I was joking around with somebody the other day. I said, I wish human beings came with turn signals, you know, so that they could tell me whether they're turning left or right before they actually change lanes.
Yeah, well, you always got to stay on your toes when you're driving like that. I like the people, you know, this is true of everybody who signal to go to the right, but then they go to the left. And, you know, the question is, are we sending the right messages to those who are following us or those who are depending upon us to do what we're supposed to do?
Right. Or are we kind of changing lanes with the same ferocity and lack of direction that, you know, that's the guy that's constantly changing lanes on the highway, and we wind up getting to our destination faster than he or she does. And that happens all the time. I mean, look at all that extra effort they were and stress that they were putting into all their lane changing and didn't get to where they were going any faster. In fact, may have been slower. Not to mention, you know, the number of middle fingers that may have been exhibited towards them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people have a way of expressing themselves. Well, we're coming up on our break time here. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Andrew's book. I want to talk about the importance of trusting your gut is what he writes about. So don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Make sure to order your copy today of Step Up and Play Big, where Chris Ruisi coaches you on how to create a future vision, make better decisions, develop effective business habits, and find out what it means to be a leader by identifying and solving problems to drive you and your organization to top performance levels. This book is a must-read for all business leaders. Find out how to get your own copy of the book on Amazon.com or by visiting ChrisRuisi.com and clicking the book. Many leaders and companies work with Chris Ruisi. As a business mentor, Chris helps to guide these leaders and companies to bigger results and puts them on the road to success. If you are looking to step into a bigger role in your organization, email Chris today to learn how you can be exceptional with less effort than you think. You can send an email to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com or you can visit the website to find out where Chris will be appearing next, coaching, and his books. Visit ChrisRuisi.com to step up and play big.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Step Up and Play Big with Chris Ruisi. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd like to send us an email, please send it to Chris at ChrisRuisi.com. Now, back to Step Up and Play Big.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. We're in our final segment. So we're heading towards the finish line of what has been and becoming and has been and will be a great show. Keep in mind that within a couple hours after we finish up here today, a recording of the show will be up on my show page at Voice America. So be sure to go back and listen, take notes, and most importantly, create a plan for yourself on what Andrew's been telling us today. There are actionable items here for you to work on. So what I want to talk about now with Andrew is something which I put under my high five categories, and for those of you out there know what I mean, is what I call, what Andrew also refers to as trusting your gut as a business leader. We have lots of things that give us direction, tell us information, but at the end of the day, trusting your gut is a critical navigational tool. Am I right, Andrew?
You are absolutely right. You know, I talk about this in the book, but there's a great episode of The Office where Michael is going to a meeting. I think he's got Dwayne with them, and they drive into a lake, literally drive the car into the lake. And as they're fishing the car out, and the police ask them, why'd you do that? He said, well, that's what my navigational system told me to do. And I just thought, oh, my God, that's what we've become. I mean, we are not paying attention to our instinctive human signals because we're too busy listening to what Siri is telling us or listening to what the navigational system is telling us or to any number of apps that go on our smartphones. And, you know, we are losing our ability to pay attention to our instincts. And leadership and survival is instinctual. Now, I'm all for, you know, visual aids, but I'm worried that, you know, we've become so attached to our smartphone. I mean, look, isn't there a new Spike Lee movie out right now about a man who falls in love with the voice on his cell phone?
Yep.
And by the way, I don't think that's all that unrealistic from some people I've met.
No, there was something on that on TV this morning.
Yeah.
We've got
to be a little careful there. Leaders lead through fact and through instinct. And, you know, some of this is caught up in the whole discussion around emotional intelligence and how important that's become. But emotional intelligence is not something you're going to learn by talking to your smartphone. It's going to something you learn by interacting with people, and lots of them, and a diverse bunch of them from all ages and genders and backgrounds. And that's where emotional intelligence really comes from. So I think we do need to trust our instincts more. And if our nav system's telling us to drive into a lake, that we know better not to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Metaphorically and otherwise.
I can recall in my career that there were some decisions which were very objective. They were very straightforward. They were no-brainers. But the more important, the harder decisions, every time I tried to make it too objective, I ended up getting myself in a jam because I didn't follow or trust my gut. And that gut... that gut develops from our experiences, what we talked about earlier, not being risk averse, taking the right risks, being able to, you know, evaluate situations at hand, learning from our mistakes, learning from our past experiences.
Well, Andrew, and again, if, you know, go back to the previous segment for a second, if we're complacent, if we're lethargic, you know, we're not going to have the energy to even pick up on those signals, to expend that extra effort.
Yep, you're exactly right. Exactly right. Now, you also talk towards the end of the book about the right of way belongs to those people who do the right, who do the things right. Let's get into that.
I talk about taking the high road and how important, you know, we talk about taking the high road, and of course, I'm looking through the book with as many driving and road metaphors that work in life, but I really do believe that those who are committed to doing the right thing. You know, we can get into conversations of karma. We can get into conversations of, you know, you get what you give. I'm a big believer in that. And I think that, you know, the more of us that go into any situation feeling like if I do the right thing, I'll be rewarded, the better off we'll be. Now, having said that, I will tell you that I've had a number of experiences in the last few years where I kind of kick myself and do the, I'm sure you'll relate, no good deed goes unpunished. And that does happen. I mean, there are times when you do the right thing and you still lose. But
yep.
I would still rather go into a situation and do the right thing and take the, you know, the dice roll that I will win and the good things will happen by doing the right thing than go in and taking the risk that, you know, once in a while, even your good work, you know, will go punished.
Yeah, I a lesson that I was taught once by one of our former senior executives was concentrate on doing the things that are right for the company and your people, and don't worry about what's right for you, because if you do the former and not the latter, everything will work out on your behalf one way, or somehow.
As long as, and this ties the whole show together like a good Seinfeld, as long as you start with an attitude in believing in the values of the institution. And you can't do that if you're going to come in with that victim mindset or any of the things that we talked about in the first segment. So, you know, if you trust in the institution and do what's right by the company, then yes, there's a very high chance that you're going to be fairly rewarded for that effort, both quantitatively and otherwise.
Yep, exactly right. Andrew, we're coming up on the ready to wrap up on here, but if folks want more information, how's the best way to get in touch with you or to get that information?
All of my contact information is on the Jones Day website, www.jonesday.com. And, of course, all of the books that I've written, including the Road Rules book, are available on Amazon.
Great. Andrew, I want to thank you for your time today. You've been great, and we're going to bring Andrew back. He's been a great guest today, and he knows a lot of stuff, and stuff is one of my favorite words, but he knows a lot of good stuff that I think all of us will benefit from. So keep an eye on my schedule and watch, because in the future we'll have Andrew back. So like I've done in my other two prior shows, we're going to end with one of my rants, and I'm going to start it off by saying, yeah, right. That's what I sometimes hear from certain business leaders when I talk about creating a no-excuse culture within their organization. And we talked about some of this before a little bit when we talked about being disengaged. And I remind them when I hear that excuses are, while they're part of the game, you don't just have to accept them. Accepting excuses comes with the territory, or it doesn't come with the territory, actually. And when you accept an excuse, you are in essence agreeing not to take action. Effective leaders know that building and sustaining a no-excuse culture can be done, but not overnight. And as a result of the combination of several distinct but related tactics, you can create a much more productive culture within your organization. For example, do you have a clear and precise vision? Do you actually do real training, not the cheap imitation kind? Are you showing people what they need to do, how to do it, but most importantly, why they need to do it? Do you have comprehensive knowledge about each of your employees' job roles, and do they in turn understand their job roles, where it fits in? Are you using the terms expectations and accountability and all those standards to help people perform at the level you want and not accepting things just because that's the easy path? Finally, do you practice good leadership and communicate through your words and actions that employee development is a key component of how you run your business or organization? Now, someone out there is saying, well, that sounds really good, Chris, but that's unrealistic. Well, here's something that is real: lost time and money. Stop for a minute and think about what mistakes and excuses are costing your organization in terms of do-overs, fixes, as well as the time it takes to navigate through the sea of excuses to get to the facts and truth. And while you're managing this, what's the cost to your brand and reputation as your customers become victims of those excuses? So it's up to you. You can build a no-excuse culture, but it does start with you. So for more information about my book and about the show, visit chrisruisi.com. And when you get there, make sure you sign up for my Monday morning wake-up call. I guarantee if you do, you will not be disappointed. A big thank you again goes out to my engineer, Matt, who again, made the show smooth and professional. And I want to thank you all for listening in. And I want to thank you, Andrew, for your time today. You were great. See you next week, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the show, Step Up and Play Big, featuring Chris Ruisi, can be heard live every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Be sure to join us again next week.